Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles on everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with the Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details. In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Hey everybody, Chuck here. I saw a UFO last night. Actually, that's not true. But it would be a great story if I were setting up this episode for March 1st, 2012, How SETI Works, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. With me, as always, is Charles W. Chuck Bryant. And this is Stuff You Should Know, the podcast. Don't get it confused.
Oh, no.
What is that? What was that?
That was my impersonation
of
Burgess Meredith.
Okay. Thank you. That was pretty good.
Thanks.
That was a good Burgess Meredith, Chuck.
Yeah.
You in the mood for alien talk?
Sure, this is the second time we've done something like this. Almost a year later.
Yeah.
Right at it.
We did How UFOs Work live in Austin.
Yeah, last March. So, yeah, I guess once a year.
We do aliens.
We'll talk aliens.
Yeah. But hey, before we get started, may I take a second?
Yeah.
I wanted to say a special hi to my wife, Yumi.
Right.
Who made me the happiest guy in the world.
You should just call her, dude.
On February 13th, yeah. I could just call her. On February 13th when we got married.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Any deets or are you just going to...
No, that's all.
All right.
I was just wanted to share my happiness with everybody out there.
So. Very well done.
Thank you very much. Hey, Yumi. So, let's get back to aliens, okay?
Yes.
Okay. So, we are doing this in honor of Are We Alone Month on Science Channel, right?
Yes.
So the month of March is Are We Alone Month, and Science Channel every Tuesday, I believe, at 10, is having a premiere of some new show that has something to do with the search for extraterrestrial life.
Yeah, cool stuff.
Yeah, it's going to be very cool. And, I mean, there's some, like all shows are going to be awesome.
Sure.
But there are some that are clearly going to be really awesome, like mm-hmm. Through the Wormhole with Morgan Freeman.
With Morgan Freeman.
I mean, that in the context of an Are We Alone month.
Yeah.
It's big news. Also, Alien Encounters with Nick Sagan.
Got to be related to Carl. Right?
Carl Pilkington, yes.
Yes.
And then, if you're in the mood for a contest, what would a month be without one? There is a SETI Live contest where the prize is to go visit SETI.
No way. Go to the California, to the Institute?
Yes.
Wow.
Pretty sweet.
Yes.
So this is all going on Science Channel all month long, and if you want more details, watch Science Channel, pal.
Yeah, or hit them up on Facebook. I bet they have info there.
Yeah. And in honor of this month, this very special month, we are doing How SETI Works, which is an acronym, SETI, if you don't know, for Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yes, and I joked before we did this that Are We Alone Month will be followed by Yes, We're Alone Day. Sort of a joke, but they haven't really found a lot of stuff yet.
Well, I don't know. Let me give you an example of something.
The WOW.
Have you heard of the WOW signal?
Yeah, we talked about this before.
We did. When?
I think it might have been one of the webcasts.
Okay.
It definitely rang a bell that had your stank on it.
No, we talked about the... Yosemite Sam signal.
Oh, I know. But I think we talked about WOW a couple years ago.
Oh, okay.
Well, the old webcast.
Let me tell you again. Let me refresh your memory because you clearly don't remember.
Clearly.
August 15th, 1977, a guy who's now known as Dr. Jerry Ehman, E-H-M-A-N. Okay. I keep wanting to call him Ehrman.
Yeah.
He was manning the Big Ear radio telescope at Ohio State University, and was analyzing some data from it, and basically saw this is what it looks like. It's a bunch of numbers and letters.
It looks like the Matrix scroll.
Very much so.
Captured.
Yes. But what that is a burst of radio activity transmitted on the 1420.456 megahertz frequency for 72 seconds.
WALN.
Right. And it was basically the closest thing we've ever gotten to hard evidence of a radio transmission from an alien civilization.
Right.
It met like all of the criteria that SETI follows, which we'll talk about later, for radio transmissions from intelligent life, right?
Yeah.
The problem is after searching for it for like 50 times specifically, it's never been found again.
Right.
And the reason it's called the WOW transmission is because Jerry Amon circled it and wrote "WOW" with an exclamation point,
right.
And that's why it's called that. So, although it since that time nothing else has come up in that same area, and we haven't had anything even remotely close to it, SETI still continues, right?
Yeah,
and SETI is both a movement and a group of people. It's an institute.
Yeah, well, there's the SETI Institute, and there's just independent SETI operations.
Yeah. I mean, you can use SETI as a... would that be an...
It'd be a noun, because it is a search.
Yeah, you're right.
Just a funky noun.
Right. But let's talk about it, Chuck. Let's talk about SETI, the challenges it has.
Well, first of all, have you seen the movie Contact?
I have.
Apparently, it's not too inaccurate from the writer of this article, who was... Freudenlich, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
He said that movie, if you want to watch that one, is fairly accurate and on track.
Well, it was based on a book written by Carl Sagan, and he definitely knew his stuff.
Yeah.
In fact,
the Sagan Institute is one of the parts of SETI Institute.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. Or the Sagan Research Center, I think.
Gotcha.
So, go ahead. You were saying?
Oh, well, so let's talk a little bit about the origin of it. SETI came about in a time when there was a large intellectual push toward searching for alien life. A lot of very, very smart people suddenly started postulating that there's probably other people out there.
Yeah.
There's got to be. Two guys, Philip Morrison and Giuseppe Coccioni, wrote a paper in Nature in 1959, and they basically said, look, if we look, we may very well not find anything.
Right.
But if we don't look, we're definitely not going to find anything.
That's a good point.
And that came at a time when a guy named Frank Drake, an astrophysicist and astronomer, was trying to start his own search. And he eventually founded SETI, I think in 1960.
Founded the SETI Institute or just SETI?
SETI. He conducted the first SETI search.
Okay, the Drake did.
Yeah, Frank Drake did.
Gotcha.
And it was based on something called the Drake equation, which I find just utterly fascinating and refreshingly understandable as far as like theoretical math equations go.
Yeah. N is the number of civilizations in the Milky Way whose electromagnetic emissions are detectable. So N equals R times FP times NE times FL times FI times FC times L.
And then there's the R is the rate of formation of stars over the lifetime of the galaxy, and that's anywhere from like 10 to 40 a year.
Yeah, stars suitable for development of intelligent life. So
right.
That narrows it down.
Then there's the fraction of those stars with planets.
FP.
Then there's the average number of those planets that are Earth-type, meaning suitable for life as we understand it.
Yeah, that's the NE.
That's about 50% of the 50% of stars with planets. We're starting to whittle down pretty quickly.
Sure.
And then there's the fraction of those planets where life develops. That's estimated at as much as 100%.
Yeah.
And then there's the fraction of life that develops intelligence. So it's not just enough to be an amoeba. You have to be an amoeba capable of creating a radio.
Right.
That's pretty low as well, about 10%. And then another 10% is the fraction of planets where intelligent life develops technology such as radio.
Yeah, that's okay. FC.
So you've got life.
And then L.
Intelligent life. And then technology.
Yeah.
And then you have the lifetime of that communicative civilization in years.
So boom. Multiply that on out. You got your Drake equation.
And you have as little as one, as much as billions.
Well, plus it's as little as one or billions because it, you know, those are, it depends on what value you put in there. And everyone's going to put in different values. So the Drake equation is going to have a wide swath.
Yes.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So you've got this, this is the framework, the Drake equation created by Frank Drake, the founder of SETI. This is the framework that SETI conducts its research with. Like one of the things they do is try to figure out exactly how many stars out there have planets with that are suitable for life, to really kind of plug in the best possible data into the Drake equation and to help them figure out where to look. Because there's three main challenges for SETI that they face just as a concept and an organization.
Yeah.
And they are, you have a really big sky out there, right?
Yeah.
You have a lot of frequencies you have a lot of radio frequencies. And you have a limited amount of telescopes.
Not much equipment.
No.
Because it's very expensive.
Exactly.
And while SETI is funded to a large degree, it's not funded to a large degree compared to like when it was part of NASA, mm-hmm. I think it was only like 1% of their budget.
Even still, that was like the most money SETI's ever had.
Yeah. But they're pretty well funded. The SETI Institute is, though, as far as private funding goes. They're doing okay.
Yeah.
I mean, they're nonprofit, obviously, so they're not getting rich. You know what I mean?
No, they're kind of hurting right now.
Oh, are they?
Uh-huh.
Oh, I thought they were doing all right.
No. They also receive federal funds, and that's all but dried up right now because of the economic downturn.
Yeah, SETI's the first to go, isn't it?
Yeah.
All right, so you propose the three problems. Here are a couple of approaches for the large sky problem. A lot of area out there. So they have two approaches there. The wide field search, basically casting a wide, non-specific net over a low resolution over a short period of time over a wide area. Could get you some nibbles if you were fishing, let's say, but it's going to be difficult to find out exactly like where the stuff is coming from.
Right.
Or a targeted search, which is what my money would be on, which are limited to sun-like stars. Like they basically factor in more of Drake's equation in this one. Say, let's look at places where we might find, target these things where we might find ETs.
Right. And they do both of those depending. They have various projects going on, ongoing. And some are targeted, some are wide field search.
Yeah.
So they're kind of covering their bases as much as possible. The next challenge was, you know, what frequency to listen to. Like,
yeah, it's not a radio dial.
No. But even with a radio dial, even with like a walkie-talkie, like if you've ever used one of those. Like,
oh, yeah.
If you're not on the right frequency, you are going to miss everything that's being told to you. So there's, like you said, it's not a radio dial. It doesn't go from like 88.5 all the way to 107.5. There are billions.
From alternative to country.
Exactly. There are billions of radio frequencies. And they, which one are you going to listen to? You can listen to them all, but again, you're cycling through them. You're not able to spend a lot of time. It's much like the same dilemma with the sky you have with the radio frequencies.
Plus, they're full of noise.
Yep, that's another problem,
too. A big problem. Natural occurring stuff.
Right. But there is a window in the radio frequency that's called the water hole, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's a natural place in the radio frequency spectrum. And by the way, radio is, they're light waves.
Yeah.
It's a type of light wave. But they're very specific. They exist on a specific frequency. But in this the spectrum, the band, there's this thing called the water hole, which goes from the 1 to 10 gigahertz range.
Yes.
And it has very little natural background noise.
Yeah.
Like very few things, you know, broadcast on this frequency. And the reason being, these frequencies are caused by hydrogen atoms and hydroxyl ions, both of which are constituents of water, which is why it's called the water hole. And they suspect that for a couple of reasons, alien civilizations would be aware of this. One, that it's just so profoundly unique in the radio spectrum that if you had any kind of awareness of the radio spectrum, you would stumble upon this.
Yeah, and that you would intentionally broadcast in a low noise frequency.
Exactly.
Because you want it to be heard.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who broadcasts on the radio wants to be heard, right?
Sure.
And then the other reason they think that alien civilizations would know about it is because water, with which it's associated, is considered an essential to life and therefore universal among intelligent life. It's not geocentric. The concept of water isn't.
Right.
So aliens would be familiar with water and would thus be familiar with the water hole in the frequency spectrum as well. So this is probably where they're putting most of their research or their effort into this water hole band of frequencies.
Yeah, I mean, they search all over, but pretty much all SETI operations will search the water hole. Yeah. As part of their ops.
Then there's magical frequencies too. Like basically they're saying like where on this band of billions of frequencies is there some sort of universal pattern? And one of the things that they figured out is prime numbers might be a good place to look because prime numbers are part of math and they're a universal constant.
Right.
So an advanced civilization might be aware of prime numbers, and if they're trying to communicate to another advanced civilization, they may be broadcasting on prime number channels.
Crazy.
That's a magical frequency.
I wonder if they've searched Pi, the Pi station.
So far we've got two of the big problems tackled.
Yes.
Generally. The third one is the most down-to-earth problem.
Yeah, no equipment, basically. These radio telescopes are expensive to build, and so there's not a whole lot of them. So they said, you know, there's a few ways we can handle this. We can conduct limited runs on ones that are already out there, basically rent space from other dudes. We can conduct analysis of data already acquired by other dudes. So like, hey, you've been listening in on all these frequencies. Let us see your data and we'll just work from that. Or we can build SETI dedicated radio telescopes, which is clearly the least popular because it's so expensive.
Right.
I mean, it's the most popular, but least feasible.
Yeah, and like the projects that they have ongoing for wide target search, or wide field search, or targeted search.
Yeah,
they have different projects dedicated to different types of radio use. Like Project Phoenix rents time at some of the better radio telescopes around the world.
Australia,
Arecibo.
Yeah, in Puerto Rico.
The one in West Virginia, Greenbank, West Virginia, has a huge radio telescope. And that's where the first SETI conference was held.
Oh, really?
1960, I believe, huh. Yeah. And then there's the Serendip Project, which piggybacks.
That cracks me up for some reason.
Why?
Serendip? I don't know. Just because it's short for serendipity. It sounds like your friend Adam that shortens everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like he would say, yeah, we met up. It was a bit of serendip.
Yeah, he would say that it's totes serendip.
Totes serendip.
So they piggyback by basically saying like, hey, like you said, let me see your data once you're done with it. We want to go over it too.
Yeah.
Hey man, it's like the hippie Rob version of astronomy.
Boy, he hadn't made an appearance in a while.
He just did.
I didn't expect him to pop up in SETI if he didn't pop up in Magic Mushrooms, you know? Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play.
Hey, everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next-generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace. And now a word from the show's sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture, shall we? You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing? It's a lifestyle that might not be for you.
That's right, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle.
How? Good question. Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends, all before you head out the door. Your money is a workaholic.
But you don't have to be, because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. So visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
So Project Serendip, like you said, it takes advantage of a lot of telescope time, but they don't have the control to say, hey, point it over there.
Right.
So they have a lot of hours, but they're just basically, that's the wide search
yeah.
being cast.
And then you said like the most desirable one was having their own telescope. Well,
yeah, that'd be great.
SETI figured out something. Rather than making a huge or paying for a huge radio telescope, they figured out that they can take a bunch of backyard satellite dishes, which I'm sure are really easy to come by these days.
Yeah.
You know, the kind like from the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Put a bunch of those together.
They're like 8 feet wide.
Right.
Yeah.
You put a bunch of those together and connect their signals using a process called interferometry.
Nice.
Thank you.
Dude, well done. First try.
And you can basically simulate a huge, large telescope for a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, it's like linking a network of computers, which is actually something also being done. We might as well get into that.
Yeah.
The SETI at symbol at home project. And that's actually the SETI Institute, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they decided that, hey, instead of building a couple of supercomputers to analyze this data, because that's one of the big problems is there's so much data. It's not like you can just plug it into your laptop.
Right.
But you can plug a tiny chunk into a laptop and network a bunch of laptops together to do the power of these supercomputers, and that is what they've done, and you can participate.
Yeah, it's pretty ingenious. And there's other things that I think SETI at home started it, and now there's things like folding at home.
Oh, really?
Which you simulate protein folding for cancer research, same thing.
Huh.
And I'm sure there's other ones that I didn't get a chance to look, but SETI at home started it where... it's a screensaver, but it's also a program And while it's running, it downloads a chunk of data from the Arecibo radio telescope.
Yeah, and that's like your little assignment.
And it's like a 100-second chunk, maybe, something like that. It doesn't seem like much, but it takes like 10 to 20 hours for the normal computer to process it. But like you said, if you have thousands of computers doing this, you have 1,000 times the processing power all of a sudden for free.
Pretty cool.
And while your computer's analyzing it, it's making notes of all of this stuff using SETI's algorithms.
Yeah.
And then it uploads the results to SETI and then downloads another chunk for analysis.
And, dude, I bet this is a very popular thing to do for stargazers.
Oh, yeah.
For stargazing nerds of the world.
There was a guy I remember who was in Arizona, I think, and he was fired from his job as, like, the IT head for the Department of Education in this one community because he booted SETI at home onto all the computers without asking. But, I mean, it's not a big deal. It doesn't take that much processing power, and it just kind of runs in the background.
Yeah, who cares?
Well, he was made a mockery of by the local news. Like, he was fired because of his search for aliens.
And right, they made him out to be some crackpot.
Yeah, it was pretty bad. But, yeah, some poor guy got fired for that. SETI at home got him fired.
That's sad. I bet he got a job with SETI or something, though.
I don't bet that.
You don't think so? They just said, sorry, thanks anyway.
Pretty much.
Well, you talked about building your own and the Alien Telescope Array. I'm sorry, the Allen Telescope Array.
Yeah, I kept taking it like that until I found out it's named after Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft.
Is it?
Who donated all of the money for it.
Well, that is still underway as far as its construction. I think they were down for a little while because of a lack of funding, and it's a $26 million deal, but I think as of 2011, they were up and running again, and part of it is complete to the extent, I think, where they can use it for things.
Right.
But they're still not finished with it, I don't think.
No, they're not. They have enough money to construct it, but they didn't have enough money to run it. So they have like a skeleton crew on it right now.
Gotcha. But it is operational, I think.
It is. They're hoping that they're going to be able to fund it by leasing some time on it to the Air Force, who is interested in using it.
They should try a bake sale.
I know.
You know?
You know, it'll be a great day when schools have all the funding they need and the Air Force has to hold a bake sale to buy a stealth bomber.
Yeah, that'll be the day.
Somebody should put that on like a bumper sticker or something.
We could shorten it, but yeah. Agreed. Should we mention the Fermi paradox?
Yeah, this is as good a time as any. I mean, one of the things that happens to SETI is that they're constantly pummeled by critics, and a lot of them cite the Fermi paradox, too.
Well, here's what SETI Institute says, because I dug into their FAQ a little bit. And one of the questions was, why do we think that there might be life out there, quote. And SETI said, you should keep in mind that we are one planet around a very ordinary star, and there are roughly 400 billion other stars and nearly 100 billion other galaxies, and they think it would be extraordinary if we were the only thinking beings in all these enormous realms. Fermi, Enrico Fermi, said that if it takes life billions of years to develop intelligence and signal or travel to the stars, and there are billions of the worlds in the universe, and the universe is 13 billion years old plus, then why haven't we been visited yet?
Yeah, when you look at it like that, the odds are...
Makes sense.
They just increase exponentially. It's kind of like a perverted version of the Drake equation used to disprove the existence of life.
The anti-Drake?
Yeah. Interesting. It was anti-Drake.
Hey, everybody. It's halftime and the scoreboard is not looking good. You're feeling low and not sure you can pull out a win. And that's when you have to dig deep, lift your head up, and say to yourself, time to get back in the game. Pull off some bank heists and take as much of your friend's money as you possibly can.
That's right. The smash hit mobile game Monopoly Go lets you compete with your friends to get the most riches and the biggest empire. It's the Monopoly you love, but on your phone, anytime, with tons of new twists, including leaderboards to compare your progress to your buddies.
That's right. You can play on countless dynamic Monopoly boards. You can make your friends bankrupt by smashing their landmarks with a wrecking ball. And you can charge other players rent for your iconic properties.
Plus, you can even work with your friends to crack open community chests in tournaments to get rewards and climb the leaderboard.
So get back out there, put on your game face, and download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store or Google Play. Hey, everybody. Did you know that Boricua is the name for someone from Puerto Rico? But it's more than just a name. It's a way of life and representation of the vibrant spirit of the island.
Yeah, that's right. It's an island that's filled with adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the entire United States.
That's right. Or you can get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico that remind you of why you travel in the first place.
Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you.
That's right. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Today, I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, everybody. You know, asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest.
That's right. They're committed to high ethical standards and even had to pass a rigorous exam before they could become a CFP professional. They offer financial planning services that take a more comprehensive view of your financial and personal circumstances, and they customize them for your needs.
That's right. Certified financial planner professionals can offer advice on a wide range of issues like reviewing your investment portfolio's allocation, handling an inheritance, rolling over a company retirement plan, building education savings, and so much more. And that's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
So, what happens if we get a signal? What happens if they're sitting around one day and they hear phone home come over the radio waves?
Well, they have a strict set of protocols that start with, you know, the first person who finds it to the you know, who gets told first, what agencies learn of it, and it's pretty cool. Apparently, contact follows the course of it pretty accurately.
Yeah.
But so a signal's detected, right? And the first thing they do is they move the radio telescope away from the signal. And then they move it back.
I bet that's nerve-wracking.
I'll bet, too.
Because you probably just want to stay locked on it, you know?
Right. You're going to lose your signal.
But you can't do that because you got to prove that it's genuinely coming from there.
Right. So if you move it and then move it back and the signal wanes and then comes back, you know that you have an extraterrestrial signal.
Right.
It's a big one. The next step, then, is to figure out whether you're getting it from, like, a satellite or
sure.
from elsewhere on Earth.
Right.
Right? After that, you're starting to shake. Your palms are sweaty.
Yeah.
And you start to rule out extraterrestrial sources like pulsars, quasars, other things that broadcast radio frequencies. By this time, you may have tinkled a little bit in your pants. And you are on the phone with another radio telescope, hopefully one on another continent, saying, hey, can you go check these coordinates and see if you're getting this frequency?
Point your little machine that way. What do you see or hear?
And if they come back and say, yep, you say, well, it's time to announce it to the world.
Now I got to get out my book, the SETI Institute, the Declaration of Principles Concerning Activities Following the Detection of Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
Yeah.
And SETI Institute says, No one's keeping anything a secret.
No, they want it disseminated quickly and widely.
Yeah.
But they want you to follow the proper channels first. And all the astronomical community gets first dibs on learning of it.
Oh, sure.
Then after that, you go to the UN.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. The UN, a lot of other international bodies, and you say, hey, guys, we have confirmed extraterrestrial contact. And they say, awesome. And the astronomer goes along and says, okay, we're moving on to the next people. Eventually, you get to the public, and the person who discovered it is meant to have the honor of announcing it to the world.
Yes.
According to the protocols.
Jodie Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And SETI is on record, by the way. The SETI Institute is saying that they don't think that there are aliens that we've been hiding in Roswell, New Mexico. They said that, you know, the presence, that would be like the biggest discovery in the history of science. And A, you wouldn't want to keep it a secret. And B, there would be thousands and thousands of people working on it. And they said it would just be impossible.
Hmm.
So they're not, you know, they're not these crackpots that think, oh, we've got aliens hidden away working on a farm in the desert of New Mexico, harvesting on water farms.
And that's where we got our microwaves from.
Exactly. And I also looked at their FAQ under the, are we sending signals? Because I thought that was kind of interesting because obviously Close Encounters, they sent messages out. And they said they are a completely passive experiment. They're only looking. They are not sending. However, we have been sending signals unintentionally for 50 years or more.
Yeah, since the 30s, since we started broadcasting on the radio.
Yeah, in television, this is the early TV broadcast reached out about to about 1,000 nearby stars, and but they said it's very unlikely that any alien civilization could have picked up on that.
No, but we are inadvertently broadcasting. Probably
yes.
In the water hole, too, I would think.
And the other reason we don't send out signals is because if the nearest civilization, they said, is 100 light years away, it would be 200 years to get a reply, and it's just not a very good way to spend your time.
Well, plus also, it's in the protocols that we decide through, like, the UN and other international bodies whether or not to respond to a signal.
Right.
That's, like, one of the last steps.
Well, they said that we've sent symbolic messages before, like, hey, here is what our solar system is like. Here are the compounds important for life. Here's the structure of our DNA in the form of a human. They said it's symbolic, but I think they're like, oh, you never know.
Right.
You know?
So they're liars then when they say they're passive.
Well, they are passive. They have done that in the past. They said it was like the 70s.
They're passive as far as astronomy goes, active as far as lying on their FAQ goes.
No, I think it was 1974 was the last time they sent out a message.
Well, there was, what, the Viking or some, I can't remember the spaceship we sent into orbit or into outer space that had, like, gold records containing all sorts of information, like the world's great information and knowledge on them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that?
Sort of.
Viking?
Yeah.
I think it was Viking. Right.
We'd probably get that wrong, though.
So what's in the future for SETI right now?
Well, the future with the programs like SETI at Home could get more people active if they're interested in their home. Future could be good there. They said they might be sending or looking for light at some point because it may not come via radio. It may come via light. You know, you never know.
Yeah, Frank Drake is all about that one now. He says that this is like the hot new field for SETI is optical astronomy.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, finishing up things like the Allen Telescope Array is important.
And then there's SETI at Home. I mean, if you want to go do that, it's pretty easy to go download.
Agreed.
I had folding at home. I've never had SETI at home.
Oh, you did folding?
Uh-huh.
Cool.
And then my computer crashed, and I was just like, meh.
Oh, really? Maybe that crashed it.
I don't know, maybe. I could tell a difference when it was processing.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's SETI. So if this kind of piqued your interest, there's plenty more information out there. You can also check out SETI's stuff on Science Channel during Are We Alone Month in March. premieres come on, I think, Tuesdays at 10, starting March 6th.
Every Tuesday?
Yep.
Like Moonlighting?
Mm-hmm. Was that on Tuesday?
I think so. I seem to remember being drawn to the television on Tuesdays. I think it was Moonlighting and A-Team.
Nice.
Or was it Moonlighting and Love Boat? No, it was Love Boat, Fantasy Island.
Yeah, yeah. Those two were definitely together.
Yeah.
Let's see, recapping. What else is at the beginning? I'm married.
Yeah.
You, me, and I are married. And I guess that's it. If you want to read SETI, you can type that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, SETI, and that will bring up this very nice article, including cool graphs and screenshots from SETI at home for some reason.
Yeah.
And since I said search bar, I think I said handy search bar even, it's time for listener mail.
All right, Josh, I'm going to call this Lucha Libre / American Wrestling from Zach.
That was a good one.
Chuck, you suggested that wrestlers carry fake blood packs. Not quite true, or at least usually not true. Instead, most wrestlers carry a razor blade in order to blade their foreheads. I've heard this, actually. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll make a little cut and bleed. Right around their hairline after being hit in the head with a chair or a cage or another hard weapon. You were also talking about the big companies in America. The WWE is the biggest right now, with TNA as the second biggest, and Ring of Honor is the third. WWE and TNA are on big TV networks, while the Ring of Honor is only on the air in certain markets. And there are many, many independent leagues, including Smashing Pumpkins' Billy Corgan's Resistance Pro. Did you know that?
No.
I guess so, dude. He's got his own wrestling league.
I wonder if he's still on The Dope.
I don't think so. I saw him one day. He's really tall.
Yeah.
Which surprised me for some reason.
I think I noticed that when the Cubs were in the World Series and he sang the national anthem. Or no, he sang the Take Me Out to the Ball Game.
Oh, really?
The inning stretch, yeah.
He's taller than all those guys.
Yeah.
So Zach says, when talking about the rules, you're saying that weapons are not allowed. And I think I might have said that this is different with American wrestling, but not true, he said. The chair was just really popular in the late 90s because they booked matches specifically to be more violent. So they would knock the ref down and people would use the chair when the ref wasn't watching, but you would still get DQ'd if the ref was to see that. And he also said Rey
Mysterio... You would get Dairy Queened.
Oh, man, that'd be great. And then he said Rey Mysterio is out with injury, but there's a good chance he will be back soon. So he's still kicking it.
That was a heck of a dispatch from the wrestling world.
Yeah, and dude, I redacted about half of it.
Thanks, Zach.
That is Zach from, I don't know where he's from. He's from Billy Corgan's basement.
Well, wow. If you have some supplementary information, not even necessarily correction, I think Zach handled that very well.
Sure.
We like to hear that stuff all the time, and we frequently read them as listener mail, so please feel free to go ahead and send us something. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can send us note or a message on Facebook at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. Or you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. But you know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line, thanks to Visible. It's true. So switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com.
Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, And how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Childproofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely. Available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.